Welcome to Sport Flight Magazine. Please bring all seats to an upright position. Seatbelts should be fastened at all times due to possible air turbulence. As Sport Flight previews and reviews the good, the bad, and the ugly world of sports, Sport Flight's humor, entertainment, and candor will propel you to speeds of 600 miles per hour and reach altitudes of 30,000 feet. Now, sit back, relax, and experience a different sports perspective.
Welcome to this week's edition of Sport Flight FYI, the BKS in sports talk as we discuss all that is good, bad, and ugly in the world of sports with James and Sean. This week's top topics are the NFL Week 9 results, the NFL's first half awards, the NFL Week 10, the previews and predictions, also the rehospitalization of Seahawks defensive coordinator Ray Rhodes, an inner-city feel-good story, the first full week of the NBA season, the thrills, spills, and chills all brought to you by Sean, black college football scores, Sport Flight's aficionado question of the week, Sport Flight's player profile, our bronze pioneer, Sport Flight's theater of the absurd, and of course, we begin the week with everyone's favorite topic, T.O., Terrell Owens' lost season. As most people are aware by now, Eagles coach Andy Reid suspends T.O. for 4 games and adds that Owens will never again play for the Philadelphia Eagles. What lies ahead for T.O.? Also, most people are aware that T.O. had his own press conference with his agent. He was remorseful, or appeared to be remorseful. He apologized to everyone in the organization, including by name Donovan McNabb, which if he had done that in the beginning, he probably would not be in the shape that he's in now. However, I believe the impetus behind all of this, and he must take some shame for it as well. I'm referring to ESPN's in-house jester, the buffoon, the class clown, Michael Irvin. For it was Michael Irvin that last week on the Dan Patrick Show indicated that the Eagles would be far better with Brett Favre as their starting quarterback as opposed to Donovan McNabb. Now, Michael Irvin is paid handsomely to evaluate and analyze games, players, and situations. It appears to me that at this particular time, he did not analyze the Eagles situation very well. And I believe the situation was clouded because of his personal like, his friendship with T.O. When you take a look at the Eagles and their problems this season, and they have had their problems, as far as Donovan McNabb is concerned, the Eagles are number one in yards per game passing, 296 yards per game. McNabb is number three in TD passes with 15. McNabb is not the problem. The problem is twofold. The lack of a running game, where they are only rushing for 61 yards per game, which ranks them 32nd in the NFL, and 27th in rushing TDs with only 2 rushing touchdowns for the year. And they have defensive problems. Their defensive roles, they are ranked, the Eagles are ranked 25th in yards per game given up. And they're also ranked 24th as far as, and this is where I look at being number one, number two, and your rankings. points per game allowed. They are allowing 24 points per game, which ranks them 24th.
Well, as far as when you look at as far as Philly, you're right. The problem isn't Donovan, because you better be leading in passing when you throw the ball as many times as he's done. And you better be up in the top five and as far as touchdowns. The glaring situation is the running game. They have absolutely no running game. When you are passing pretty much your first 10 plays, 8 of them are passes, that will not work. And it's the running game is a major issue, and also they're letting, and we talked about this a couple weeks ago, they're just giving up too many big plays. And the defense is just not coming together and gelling like they were last year. You can go ahead and throw T.O. out of the mix, because when T.O. was there and playing, he was having a great season. So you can't say T.O. was the problem on the field. So this whole situation, this whole quote-unquote soap opera, it's really masking the fact of what is the actual problem. And the actual problem is running game and the defense is very lacking. They lost a lot of great players. Hugh Douglas, they released, but they're losing a lot of players on the defensive side, and that's what truly is the reason why they are in fourth place and last place in a very, very competitive division, where they're going to have to really fight to go ahead and just get a wild card spot. We don't even talk about division right now, because it's going to be very hard for them to leapfrog over the three teams in that division. We're talking about Dallas, New York, and Washington, who they play three of the next 4 weeks. They play in their division.
Looking at NFL Week 9 and the results from that, probably definitely the most exciting game, the game that went down to the very final play, was Kansas City and Oakland, with Kansas City winning at home 27-23 on the very last play.
And that game proved one thing, is that the NFL is not always
done. Has a set of ball?
Well, somebody had a set, and trust me, they almost was going to get them chopped off if they didn't pull off that play. But you look at it, usually most 99% of the time, they would have kicked the field goal, go into overtime, and take their chances on the coin flip. But screw the coin flip. You need to go ahead and get the W, because usually the case is, and just in football period, that the road team will take that type of chance, not the home team. So that made it even extra interesting that he said, screw it, last play, we going for the win, mano a mano, fourth and goal at the one-yard line. Let's see who got the better team, and you go ahead, rush and play. That was a great finish, absolutely. Definitely the best this year.
Well, you know, it's been a roller coaster ride for this season in the NFL, and when you go to pick or pronosticate from week to week, you can tell, because teams that should win lose. Those teams that should lose, on occasion, they do win. Case in point, although Houston did not win this past Sunday, they gave Jacksonville a run for their money, and Jacksonville had to come back with two long touchdown drives in the fourth quarter in order to beat Houston 21-14.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And then Atlanta overtakes Miami 17-10.
And I think the thing about with Atlanta, what was, I guess, so surprising about that is what Vic did. And Vic, what he did was he threw the ball very well. He threw over 70% during that game. And he made sure a lot of people knew about that, because one of the biggest, and we talked about this once again, one of the biggest things about him is, you know, he runs too much. He doesn't stay in the pocket. Not saying that Miami's no punk as far as defense, but he was able to get the time, and he was able to set his feet and throw that ball like we know he can throw it with the accuracy that he could. And
He had a decent day. He didn't have anything super impressive. He threw for about 220-some yards, one touchdown,
which
is more than he normally throws.
Yeah,
throws below 200 yards per game.
I think what was more impressive was his
accuracy.
Accuracy, exactly. He threw 70%, which is very unheard of for him. He's usually around the 40 to 50. He'd be lucky. So he's usually around that 35 to 45% as far as completion rate. So for him to throw 70% was a huge deal. You're right. He didn't do nothing spectacular. He didn't go for 300 yards and with 250-plus yard bombs. No, but he was able. He read his coverages well. He did his checkdowns correctly, and was able. There was no reason for him to really run as much as he used to. I look at it as a simple reason. If there is an opening, and it's always easier to run down the field than throw down the field. That's what always my contention, especially when there's nobody near you within 5 yards, and you're the fastest person on the field.
But
to me, that's easy.
The contention is just win, baby, just win.
And that's the point. He said it.
Yeah.
And he said it.
Right.
We're winning. Shut the heck up. And that's the way I would have put it.
I knew what you wanted to say. Okay.
Huh?
I knew what you wanted to say,
hey,
and I'll accept that.
Hey, we on iTunes. They will put expletives on us in a hurry. So gotta keep it clean. Yeah, besides kids listening.
All right. But another exciting game, and once again, as I mentioned, the roller coaster ride. The New York Jets had the opportunity to defeat San Diego on their last drive, and they simply couldn't get it done.
Yes, and you look at the simple reason. Yet another Jets quarterback hero comes in the mix and was born.
Bollinger, yeah.
With Bollinger replacing the now 123-year-old Vinny Testaverde. First of all, them throwing their first passing touchdown, in about, 7 weeks? And when you mention the fact entering the game that LaDainian Thomason had more passing touchdowns than the Jets quarterbacks combined, that's a problem. So, and they played a very excellent game and was going down, and you're right, they just couldn't pull it off inside the red zone,
yep.
Could not pull it off once. And also another thing I would like to say is I hope Wayne Corbett, who's always been a gritty, gutty player for the last, it seems like, 20 years he's been in the league, but he had a concussion towards in that last drive,
right.
And it looks like he is going to be done for the season, and possibly he has played his last game because of the multiple concussions. And I just wish him a speedy recovery, because he was one of those great blue-collar players who deserve to get the accolades that he got, very underrated, but got the accolades that he got from those Jets fans who knew what hard work that he has done and what he has contributed for that team.
Speaking of concussions and also injuries in the NFL, most people are very much aware of the fact that Teddy Bruschi was playing his second game Monday night as New England entertained the Indianapolis Colts that were in town. A number of people are unaware that there is another NFL personnel who also had a mild stroke this season and attempted a comeback, although the attempt was on a limited basis, and I'm referring to the defensive coordinator with the Seattle Seahawks, Ray Rhodes. Most people are familiar with Ray Rhodes, as he at one time was the head coach in Philadelphia and also for one season with the Green Bay Packers. He was re-hospitalized for the second time in 2 months with another mild stroke, so we need to keep him in our prayers as well.
And also another thing I think you need to look and see is we could see the end of a couple of careers as far as quarterbacks. One who we can obviously talk about, that who should really think about it, is Brett Favre. Brett Favre.
You know, I think Favre is doing well as far as passing. He just doesn't have anything to go along with him. He's lost his wide receiving core, with the exception of Driver. He has lost his running back. Amon Green and Davenport are each gone. So he doesn't have any tools to work with, and
that's fine and dandy.
The gunslinger, and he just doesn't have the talent who can catch those bullets.
That's fine and dandy, but if you look at some of the decisions that he has made, as far as yes, he's still the gunslinger.
They're no different than decisions he's made over the years he's been playing. He just doesn't have the personnel.
But he has made some really, really dumb mistakes. We can look as far as last week, as far as the fake spike, but nobody else knew it was a fake spike. At the end, I'm going to go for a Hail Mary. No, I'm going to run down the field. Oh, I'm about to get tackled. Let me throw the ball forward. Oh, by the way, I'm 15 yards past the line of scrimmage. Brett Favre didn't do that 3 years ago. He wouldn't have done that stuff. Now, does he do some kooky things? Absolutely. But the stuff he's doing and the passes that he's throwing to, there's sometimes he's throwing it to a wall of defensive players. I don't give a care
which is not any different than what he's done his entire career. But he's been able to get away with it in years past. He's not able to get away with it this year.
Absolutely. And the one I think a lot of people, and the other quarterback that I'm talking about that I don't think a lot of people have really, really looked into, that's Steve McNair. I think you're really looking at Steve McNair's last season.
Injuries have taken their toll.
With the NFL, in the NFL. Definitely with the Titans. I think they're going to let him go because of the injuries. And he just looks like a beaten, battered person. And that's person who doesn't have he has even worse. He doesn't have nobody.
He has all rookie, for the most part, rookie wide receivers. So they are rebuilding because they let a number of their players go. Case in point, Mason is in Baltimore with the Ravens because
salary cap. Right. They cut like 20 people because of salary cap.
Purgatory that they were in.
Yes.
So if they let McNair go, I don't see McNair attempting to go with another team. I think he would just simply retire.
I think he's
been battered and beat for the last 2 to 3 seasons.
That's a man who needs to sit down and maybe, you know, think about being an analyst because it's just going to be a lot easier for him. Because, he's a warrior, do not get me wrong. And it shows because of all those injuries that he has taken throughout the course of his NFL career. So I think you're looking at towards the end of this year being his farewell to definitely to the Titans and possibly to the NFL.
You know, in sports, as in the real world, there's always that gray area between perception and reality, and more often than not, fans receive their perceptions through the media, whether it's electronic media, radio, TV, or through the print media, magazines, newspapers, etc. If I were to ask you, as far as this season is concerned in the NFL, what is the worst division in the NFL, what would you immediately say?
Oh, the North. The NFC North.
And you would be correct. But were you aware that there's another division that's equal to the NFC North? And that's why I bring this perception and reality situation up. Are you aware that the AFC East has the same record as the NFC North? 12 wins, 20 losses.
Wow. You're right.
12 wins and 20 losses. Because the leading team in the AFC East is 4-4.
Yep, and it's New England.
And that's New England.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So you're looking at,
as a matter of fact, the Bears have a better record at 5-3.
Yeah, so you're looking at possibly as well as the North, the NFC North, the AFC East, only going to have one team in the playoffs, and that's the division champs.
Exactly.
And that means anybody can still win that division because New England is far from dominant this year, and it's proven that because the most anticipated matchup so far this season was that game between New England and Indianapolis on Monday, and it turned out a flat blowout. I mean, the Colts came in there and stomped a mud hole in the Patriots and walked it dry. Filled it up and walked it dry again.
Well, another perception reality situation. The Cleveland Browns, as we are very much aware, are rebuilding for the third time since they have returned to
the NFL. Are you sure it's the third time?
The third time.
Okay.
Well, they have their third head coach since 99.
Okay.
And the perception by most people is the fact that they are just a terrible team, especially their defense. But are you aware that their defense has only given up, until this past Sunday, had only given up one touchdown per game since week two?
Yeah, that when I found out that information, I was very stunned by that.
And they gave up two touchdowns this Sunday, and they did win 20-14.
Mm-hmm.
But that's the first time since week two that they have given up two touchdowns. So as most people expected their offense to be ahead of their defense is actually playing better than their offense. They're having problems scoring points. They are giving up a lot of yardage. It's the old adage of bend but don't break.
Yes.
But they're not giving up points.
Exactly. And, you know, right now they're one game ahead of Baltimore. But we knew Baltimore was going to struggle because their offense has been bad. It's actually gotten worse with Jamal Lewis not performing as well as he normally does. Ray Lewis being hurt, so that hurts their always dominant defense, actually, Ray Lewis and Ed Reed, the two best defensive players in the NFL, both being hurt, has actually hurt them as well. So you're absolutely right about that. But we said it once, we say it again. NFL won a parity. They got parity because any given Sunday, no pun intended,
is
to James
Fox. Is it parity or mediocrity?
I think it's parity. I honestly think it's parity. You look at as far as how, because of the hard cap salary structure, it makes it hard to have a dynasty year after year after year. It's exciting on one end, but people want to see the same teams go ahead and keep on winning to a point. They keep on. Then once they pass that point, then they wish somebody else comes and wins. That's just fickle how we are in this society. Now it's came to the point, it's impressive that New England has won three out of the last four Super Bowls, but now they want somebody to beat New England. And right now, the Indianapolis Colts is that front runner to beat, to knock out New England this year. So,
we mentioned earlier on in the program about T.O.'s problems and the fact that the Eagles have suspended him for four games and he will not play with the Eagles again. Even when the suspension is up, they will not reactivate him to the team.
Yeah, he got Keyshawn.
Yeah, another Keyshawn-type situation which occurred a couple of years ago. And we also are aware that the trading deadline for the NFL is also over, so they can't trade him now. But just hypothetically,
mm-hmm.
if they could trade him, what do you think about this trade? T.O. to Miami for Ricky Williams.
I don't think they'll pull that trade off. They would pull that trade off if
What end of the trade would say no?
Oh, Ricky Williams.
Well, he wouldn't have anything to say about it. Basically, it would be the teams, whether Miami would do it,
yeah.
Whether Nick Saban would be willing to take on T.O.
Yeah, I don't think, and that's a disaster waiting to happen because, once again, you have a very inept quarterback. Not even that, but now you look on the field, and the quarterback situation is not the best. Let's forget about the Colts for a second.
Well, you know, a lot of people have forgotten that they're talking about how he disses Donovan and things of that nature. But this is his M.O. Have they forgotten that he did the same thing in San Francisco, and that's why San Francisco had to get rid of him?
Well,
because he talked about Garcia in San Francisco?
There's a difference between the San Francisco issue and the Philly issue. And the thing is, in San Francisco, most of the media was agreeing with him. about Garcia. They can't. You can't agree with about Donovan because he's one of the top five quarterbacks in the league.
Yeah, right.
So most of the media was agreeing with Donovan and was actually fueling the flames to have
with T.O.
to have him with more sound bites about Garcia.
I found that interesting. They never really bring up the situation. He did the same thing. He basically acts like a you know how it is with little kids, and you don't have children, so you may not know, but they go through their terrible twos when they are at 2 years old.
Just because I don't have kids don't mean I haven't been around them. So, yes, I do know about the terrible twos.
So he acts like a child in his terrible twos.
Yeah, and it's honestly sad. You look at this very gifted player.
Look at his
body. You want a blueprint of that. How can I do that?
His window of opportunity is closing because he's 32 years of age.
His window is closing. There's a lot of talk now. It's going to be basically rent T.O. for the rest of his career. They're not going to give him the big multi. Your contract that he's desperately looking for.
Well, let me
Honestly, I think some team will be dumb. One team will give him a multi-year contract. The problem is
it would be incentive-laden.
Two, it's going to be with a team that doesn't have a really good quarterback. The quarterback is going to be in the bottom level. Now, I think one would be very interesting place that he will go is Atlanta.
Possibly go.
Atlanta.
I don't know that Atlanta would want to expose Michael Vick to T.O. because Michael Vick has a tendency to run an awful lot, and you know that's just a situation waiting to explode. Not implode, but explode.
But here's the thing about that.
Because T.O. would be, because he wanted to play with Donovan McNabb. Now, Donovan throws far better, far more often than Michael Vick. No, that situation would not work. They may try to do it, and that would be like trying to fit a square peg into a round hole.
No, it wouldn't. I don't think it would be doing that because one thing Atlanta does not have, they do not have a receiving core. And I think that because before T.O.
That was the same thing with Philadelphia. That people said the same thing about that was a marriage made in heaven. They needed a go-to guy in Philadelphia.
I think T.O.
became that go-to guy. But T.O. cannot exist with anyone. I don't care where he goes.
You're
going to encounter similar problems.
I think Atlanta could work. Don't ask me really how I know. I think Atlanta could work. As far as you look at the ownership, that's another key issue. Ownership is not going to be, you know, throwing down the iron fist. You got a coach who is player friendly, and let's look at these.
If you're going to disrupt his program and mm-hmm. mess up the chemistry of that team,
I completely understand that.
Yeah.
But if you want to talk about histories, if you want to look at histories of T.O.'s expense, let's look at the history on the other end. Let's go ahead and play devil's advocate. You look at San Francisco regime. You had a tough-minded coach. You had basically a front office that was completely in shambles. They would say one thing
San Francisco
minute by minute.
With Mariucci? I don't think Mariucci was a tough-minded coach
in
the sense that he didn't give any latitude to T.O. T.O. showed that he had no respect for the team.
No.
And as a head coach, you have to lay down a law. You can't let one player disrupt the entire team.
And that's why I completely understand that.
Because Philadelphia is not a better team without T.O. As far as on the field, they're a better team off the field without T.O.
Oh, yeah, I completely agree. But I think looking at the management and coaching style, I think that will work. I'm not saying they're going to pamper him because that will be wrong. That will be dead wrong. He doesn't need that. He doesn't need a pacifier. He doesn't need his diaper change. I'm not saying that at all. But I think a management change, a way of thinking, Atlanta might be a good fit. They might look into.
No matter where T.O. goes, there's going to be some combustibility. My question is, with his apology today, was it sincere or was it simply damage control?
Oh, it was damage control.
Eagles management view it? Did they view it as too little, too late?
Oh, absolutely.
Or that ship has sailed?
Yeah.
Or that dog won't hunt?
They said immediately, about 5 minutes after T.O. was done, he's not coming back. We don't care how much he apologizes. He's not coming back. So, yeah, it was damage control, and it was also basically to recoup some money. Because regardless of what the fact is, he's going to lose $800,000 over the – right now, he's losing over $800,000 for 4 game checks. Then he's going to get paid for the rest of the season. But because of that, detrimental to the team in his contract, which has clearly states he will lose and have to give up $1.7 million back in the signing bonus that he got last year. So when you add all the losses up, he is still going to end up losing money this year. That's the reason why the file grievance happened so far right now as it stands. But the grievance has been set. They're going to meet I think early next week, and then it's going to be decided by an arbitrator where it's going to be said, yeah, you're going to have to cough up that money, or no, you don't. And I think it's going to be a compromise down the middle of you're going to cough up some checks, but you won't lose your bonus, because one thing is that conduct detrimental to the team, you're going to have to seriously prove, and that's the hardest thing to prove, because words isn't the reason to go ahead and put that label on somebody, because that's all it was words. So it's going to be the Eagles think it's going to be a slam dunk, but a lot of other people, including myself, doesn't believe that. So it might go right. It could go as far as a compromise. It's going to be a win-loss situation for both parties.
Well, to wrap up the T.O. topic, my last word is some people love a parade. T.O. loves a tirade, and that, I think, explains it all. You know, we are beyond the midway point of the season, and looking at the first half, give me your team for the first half, the best team.
Oh, that's easy. Indianapolis Colts, only undefeated team in the NFL. And with two more games, if they go ahead and get 10-0, then we're going to see the Dolphins of 72 come out of the woodworks and start giving the heebie-jeebies, so they can be still the undefeated team in the history of the NFL.
Well, now that they have vanquished their bitter enemy, New England, and they have gone to 8-0, the media, that's going to be the next agenda for the media.
Right, and that's why
if they can become, and a number of teams have made it this far before,
yeah,
but have not succeeded in the manner by which the Dolphins of 72 did with an undefeated season.
And actually, it's going to be this next game is going to be the very big indicator to see how they deal with
this. The Houston
this.
Game or the game after that, which is Cincinnati?
I'm saying the Houston game. And here's the reason why.
That could be a quagmire, because they can overlook Houston.
Exactly. They can overlook Houston.
Although it's going to be in the RCA Dome, so.
They can still overlook, they could possibly overlook Houston, and they be just still be on the high of winning against the team they could never be.
The arch nemesis, yeah.
Exactly. So this week is going to be this is a week that's going to be critical. And then, obviously, that Cincinnati game, which a lot of people are saying will be their first loss, which is stunning still, even though they are playing excellent. It's just stunning
to
see that.
Well, Cincinnati has a bye week, so Marvin and company, they'll have 2 weeks to get ready for Indianapolis, although the game will be in Indianapolis, I believe. And Cincinnati has had their problems in stopping the run. So, and Edgerrin James has run extremely well. As a matter of fact, he has been the key to their offense, with the exception of this past game when Manning threw for 3 touchdowns.
Absolutely.
But who would be your worst team for the first half?
I say the Green Bay Packers. You look at as far as how they have played, and who they had on their roster. Granted, they had a lot of injuries and started from week one when Walker tore his ACL. But they should not be, truly should not be 1-7. So as far as the worst team, it's, I think, without a doubt, a no-brainer, is the Packers.
Your best coaching job during the first half?
You know what? It would be easy to say Dungy, but I honestly have to go ahead, and this might be a stunner to you, but I got to go with Mike Shanahan. Because to get Denver 6-2, which a lot of people, and I think myself included, picked them last in the division, is absolutely great. It's still going to be a competitive division, but Denver at the halfway point being 6-2, great coaching job for Shanahan.
To me, it's Tony Dungy, as you mentioned earlier.
Yeah.
With the first half of perfection, 8-0, and then soundly, not just beating New England, but soundly beating them Monday night to go 8-0, Tony Dungy. A close second to me is Marvin Lewis.
Of course.
Turning that program around in Cincinnati.
Of course.
Which at one time was the worst program. Are you aware that they have not had a winning season in 14 years?
Yeah.
14 seasons,
I should say. And that was the last time they made it to the playoffs.
Playoffs in 1990 was the last time they made it to the playoffs.
Absolutely. Yeah, you really can't go wrong with the other two coaches that you said, because Marvin Lewis has been taking that team only but up every year that he's been there, and it's absolutely a wonderful job.
Well, they've had they have now matched their first two seasons in well, no, they haven't matched it as of yet, but they will soon match it.
I don't see them going.
The past 2 years, they've gone 8-8.
Yeah, I don't see them going. I don't see them going on the slide and go do a reverse of their record now. I don't see them going 2-7, end up 0-7 to go 7-9 for the season. I just don't see that happening.
I remember taking a look at their schedule for the balance of the season, and I think their opponents for the second half of the season, their winning record is somewhere in the neighborhood of 5-16. So it's not, it should not be that tough for them during the second half of the season. So
absolutely.
The MVP player for the first half.
I'm going to actually stun you on this one.
You stun me all the time.
Well, that's true. Steve Smith, the Carolina Panthers wide receiver.
Coming back from his injury, yes.
Coming back from his injury. And before you go ahead and before, because he played an excellent Super Bowl, get injured the first week of the season last year, and to do what he is doing, it looks like every week he's catching a ball 50-plus yards for a touchdown.
And he doesn't have great speed.
Not whatsoever.
Not a large receiver.
Not whatsoever. He makes Marvin Harrison look big.
So it must be the technique.
It has to be. He has perfect technique that he understands his weaknesses, and he had to work on his strength, and his strength is route running. And then once, the thing about it is, he's not the fastest person, but if he gets a step ahead of you, you're not catching him. It's absolutely amazing. That's why I'm picking Steve Smith. I think what he has done for Carolina and keeping them actually in the race where they're tied with Atlanta, that's who's my MVP.
My first half MVP is the running back for the Indianapolis Colts, Edgerrin James, as they have changed their philosophy, as I stated, with the exception of, and he still had over 100 yards Monday night, but he leads the NFL in rushing yards from scrimmage and also in first downs. So he is my MVP for the first half of the season.
And then you also look at it, since 1999, he's had the most 100-yard games. The person in second place of Curtis Martin, it's trailing him by 11 games. So he's consistent. So, once again, I can't totally disagree with you on that one.
And finally, your rookie of the year through the first half.
You know what? I'm going to go with Cadillac on that one.
I can't argue with you on that. I'll go there, too. Up until his injury, he was leading the NFL in rushing. You know who has come on of late has been the tight end for Pittsburgh, Heath Miller.
Well, basically, He's like the big weight version of Chris Carter. All he does is catch his touchdown. That's it.
He's somewhat reminiscent of Todd Heap in Baltimore.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
He's somewhat reminiscent of that. Okay, I mentioned earlier during our topics that we were going to discuss today, you know, for young black men, oftentimes the media will talk about their crime and talk about the violence and the despair that is associated with our young black men. It's not that often that we have an opportunity to give some positive information, pass along some positive information. And this is with regards to a inner-city high school team out of Cleveland, Ohio. As a matter of fact, it's my wife's alma mater. It's Glenville High School in Cleveland, Ohio. And their football program is headed by Ted Ginn Sr. For those of you in the audience, that name may ring a bell, as he is the father of Ohio State wide receiver Ted Ginn Jr., out of Ohio State. Ted Ginn Sr. is the high school football coach, and this past weekend they won their first playoff game 46-0. And on Sunday morning, 9 of Glenville's winning football players were baptized all together. And in addition to that, 50 of their teammates were in attendance to support them. Ted Ginn Sr. is kind of like a father figure to these players. And his philosophy for his players is, what sense does it make to win a game but yet lose your soul? So I like to applaud these young men who are not only winning on the football field, but they're also winning at the game of life.
Absolutely, absolutely. Hear stories like that, it's just, it brings you, it tells you, it gives you hope as far as our future isn't in total despair.
Not as bleak as the media would have you to believe.
Absolutely.
You know, to think of it in that manner. And as we move on to our first week of the NBA report, and it's the first full week of the season. And as I mentioned in the opening dialogue, the thrills, spills, and chills. Now, the thrills I see as the Milwaukee Bucks, the Los Angeles Clippers, and the Washington Wizards being a surprising 3-0. The spills is the injury to Shaq, and the chills is the fact that the New York Knicks are 0-3 and the Sacramento Kings are 1-2.
Well, absolutely. And we can go ahead and first start off with as far as the surprising teams. And you look at after basically tonight's games and taping this Tuesday night, you look at the Central. I did say four teams was going to make it into the playoffs. The team that I said was not going to make the playoffs was Milwaukee. Well, if the season ended today, four teams would have made the playoffs.
Well,
Milwaukee's not one of them. they did lose their last game, but what a great way to start off the week! You have Michael Redd just shooting the lights out. T.J. Ford, who a lot of people thought his career was over, just dropping assists every way possible. And Bogut did not seem scared being an NBA player, playing absolutely well.
T.J. Ford, on his first game back, almost had a triple-double.
Now, that's a good way to come back. So you look at Milwaukee, they are going to be a very, very tough team to beat, and people need to watch out for the Milwaukee Bucks, me included, which means one thing, the Central, it's up in the air because these games are going to be tight throughout all these Central Division games are going to be tight. So it's going to be very interesting to see on that. You go ahead and look at the Clippers. Clippers went off a very fast start. The backcourt of Mobley and Cassell, which was the thing I was concerned about because they both love to shoot. Now, granted, they both still shooting.
Yeah, would they have enough balls to supply for each?
Yeah, but they're hitting their shots very well. And then having Elton Brand, as far as in the front court, he's always a double-double. Just put 2010 on, just put it in the scorebook and everybody be happy. So look for that team to come very well. I also think their schedule shows has helped them along the way, but we're going to go ahead and keep a close eye on them. One team we got to look at, and one team that I'm really not very surprised that is having a bad season is the Sacramento Kings. They just don't have they don't have the firepower like they used to. You got Bibby and you have Starakovich. That's it.
Who, you know, 2 years ago they were one of the top five teams in the Western Conference.
Absolutely.
Who started for them at that particular time? Because Bibby was still there.
Mm-hmm.
Stojanovic was there.
Uh-huh.
Who are they missing?
Well, Chris Webber, number one.
That does hurt. Right.
Believe it or not, even though he was 75 years old and on his 14th knee, Vlade Divac.
Oh, Vlade, yes.
You know, he opened up a lot of open shots because he was a great passing center. Then you had Brad Miller come in the mix, and they played together, so it made a nice, with the high-low, made it very nice how they played. But then they lost the firepower off the bench with Bobby Jackson. So they lost a lot of offense.
Yeah, they have.
So you lose all that offense, you in trouble. So that doesn't surprise me whatsoever. Interesting thing is, you look at another surprising team is the Charlotte Bobcats. Oh, I guess a new arena will do wonders for you. Granted, I think, you know, the owner's going to find a way to mess that up, but that's besides the point. But they're playing absolutely great. They got a great young core of players that can possibly lead them to an excellent, excellent future. So we're going to be looking at that. But the biggest thing in the Southeast is looking at, as you just said, the Miami Heat with Shaq, and I saw the injury, and Reggie Miller, who was broadcasting the game because it was with the Heat and the Pacers, he said it right away. Shaq is out for at least a month. And sure enough, the diagnosis is he's going to be out 2 to 4 weeks. It's going to be very interesting to see what the big man.
He came down on someone's foot, didn't he?
Yeah, he stepped on, and he just stepped on another player's foot, and you saw it twitch. But you got to remember, when you got 22 size triple E, that's a lot of real estate. You don't know what you're going to be falling on. So
let me ask you this. Is Shaq becoming injury prone? Because we realize that he missed some key games with Miami last season.
Shaq has been injury prone since when he left Orlando. So this is really truly no shock. It just hurts the Miami Heat because everybody was dead silent. It hurts the Miami Heat fans and anybody who has him on his fantasy team. I'm one included. But it's not stunning that he is he got injured. I think the stunning part, he got injured so early in the season because he usually, when he does get injured, he gets injured later towards the middle, later end of the season. So being out a month, it's going to be very interesting. Alonzo Mourning is going to be playing a lot more minutes, but Alonzo Mourning has had a great opening start of the season as well.
Will he have the stamina to play 20, 30 games if required?
Yeah, that's going to be the key. But right now, he's playing back to the old Alonzo Mourning of, like, the Charlotte Hornet days and his first 2 years with the Heat. He's playing at the last game, he had 4 blocks and a double-double. So it's going to be very interesting to see. But one of the things you saw surfacing up when the Heat played the Knicks was, once again, too many players, not enough balls. Because Antoine Walker and Jason Williams got into a little shouting match during that.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about that.
Well, it was that Walker expected Jason to be making a quick cut towards the basket. Jason did not make that cut. The ball was turned over. Jason Williams quit on the play, so to compound the injury, and Antoine Walker was not taking that and was yelling at him throughout the course of the next play, of the foul call, and they almost got into a face-to-face confrontation. The person who breaks it up is Gary Payton. That was kind of funny to me. Because you know Gary Payton will talk to anybody at any given time. So that's something to look at, because Payton actually said something that was kind of like a, almost like a backhanded slap as far as how people are getting playing time and how people are getting involved into the offense and stuff. So that underlining with the, your leader, not only on the court but in the locker room, is gone for a long period of time. It's going to be very interesting. But Alonzo Mourning, he's been a leader in that Heat locker room, so probably people will be listening to him. But it's going to be very interesting to see, like I said, throughout the course of the season, well, at least for the next month, how that shakes out.
Sportflight's black college football scores from Division I AA. Norfolk State outlasts Morgan State 24-21. Alabama A&M blows out Jackson State 52-6. Grambling State continues to roll, downing Alabama State 32-27. Mississippi Valley State drops a heartbreaker to Alcorn 38-36. Prairie View A&M crushes Arkansas Pine Bluffs 34-7. Hampton squeaks by Bethune-Cookman 24-21. North Carolina A&T loses to Florida A&M 24-14. Eastern Illinois crushes Tennessee State 27-3. South Carolina State spanks Howard 23-9. And Southern University bruises Texas Southern 44-20. Division II black college scores, rankings, standings, conference information can be found by clicking on to urbancollegesports.com. Our sports aficionado question, you know, with the Colts breaking the curse of the New England Patriots last night, the Colts finished the first half, as we mentioned earlier, 8-0, and now they'll be followed by the media, obviously, to project the possibility that the Colts can match the 72 undefeated Dolphins record. And speaking of those Dolphins, that's where our sports aficionado question comes from this week. There are six members of the undefeated 72 Miami Dolphins inducted into the NFL Hall of Fame. Name them. There are six members of the undefeated 72 Miami Dolphins inducted into the NFL Hall of Fame. Name them. I'll give you one hint. Five are offensive players. One is a defensive player. I don't know if you remember the Killer Bees as their defensive team at that particular time.
Yes.
You remember the Killer Bees?
Yeah, I do remember the Killer Bees. Couldn't name them, but I do remember the Killer Bees.
Well, there was only one of them that made it into the Hall of Fame on the defensive side of the ball.
Right. That's a good one. Yeah, nice way to go from the softball to the 125-mile-an-hour fastball.
Oh, that was a softball last week, right?
Oh, that was beyond a softball. That was a beach ball.
Okay. Sportflight's bronze pioneers. Many black athletes of the past are recognized as symbols of struggle for freedom, justice, and equality. Jack Johnson, Joe Louis, Jesse Owens, and Jackie Robinson resonate with the public. However, such names as Fritz Pollard, Kenny Washington, Marion Motley, and Dick Night Train Lane have yet to be afforded similar public status. Sportflight's Bronze Pioneers is in recognition of these black paragons of football nobility. This week's Bronze Pioneer, Bobby Mitchell, running back slash wide receiver from the University of Illinois, drafted in the seventh round by the Cleveland Browns, 1958. Blessed with exceptional speed, balance, and faking ability, Mitchell teamed with legendary fullback Jim Brown four seasons with the Browns. Noted for spectacular long-distance scoring plays as a halfback, punt-slash-kick returner, Mitchell totaled a career 14,078 combined yards, along with 91 touchdowns, 521 pass receptions, and 8 kick returns for touchdowns. Mitchell holds the Cleveland Browns career records for kickoff return touchdowns at 3 and rookie yards per carry at 13.3. In 1962, Mitchell was traded to Washington for the number one pick of 1962, Syracuse running back Ernie Davis, the first black player to win the Heisman Trophy. Mitchell made NFL history, becoming the first black player to be employed by noted racist Preston Marshall, then owner of the Washington Redskins. The Redskins switched Mitchell from halfback to flanker back. Mitchell scored 3 touchdowns during his first Redskins game. Facing his former Browns team in game number 2, Mitchell scored on a 50-yard pass reception in the final moments to upset Cleveland 17-16. During Mitchell's first season as a Redskin, he led the NFL with 11 touchdowns and 72 pass receptions, earning Pro Bowl selection. Successful seasons in Washington earned Mitchell 4 Pro Bowls and 2 All-NFL recognitions. Upon retirement, Mitchell became the assistant general manager of the Washington Redskins. In 1983, Mitchell was elected to the Pro Football Hall of Fame in Canton, Ohio. Bobby Mitchell and other bronze pioneers opened doors for today's black NFL players. This has been a Sport Flight FYI. Bronze Pioneers. Do you remember Bobby Mitchell at all?
Yes, and I knew the situation, how Bobby Mitchell got on the Redskins.
Oh, you knew that as well?
Yeah, and I think that had to be a very interesting first meeting when he became a Redskin with the owner.
Preston Marshall?
Yeah.
Well, Preston Marshall had said prior to that Black would never play on his team.
Yeah, he basically got forced to play.
It had to do with their stadium there in Washington.
Right. He was basically forced.
Roselle forced him into that.
Yeah, he had to force him to get, have a player on that squad. And, yeah, that had to be very interesting, to say the least.
To be a fly on the wall for that conversation.
Oh, my goodness. If we had, those little small, lipstick cameras, that would have been perfect to hear that conversation.
And the unfortunate thing that occurred, everyone was expecting that baby bull backfield in Cleveland with Ernie Davis coming out of Syracuse to team up with Jimmy Brown in the backfield. And unfortunately, Ernie Davis died of leukemia, never to play one single game with the Cleveland Browns.
Yeah.
And Ernie was the very first black Heisman Trophy winner, the very first one.
Didn't realize that.
Yeah, he was the very first Heisman Trophy winner. As you know, Sport Flight each week brings to you the theater of the absurd. This week, what other story could it be? The Carolina cheerleaders spreading love. Carolina was in Tampa this weekend as the Tampa Buccaneers played host to Carolina, and they brought along their cheerleaders. Well, apparently some of the cheerleaders decided to go out Saturday night. Nothing unusual. However, apparently a couple of them became somewhat inebriated and felt the urge to use the ladies' room. And upon using the ladies' room, they decided to become somewhat amorous toward each other in one of the stalls. Which caused a lot to back up out of the ladies' room, which is not abnormal because normally if you go to a nightclub or if you're at a stadium, the one bathroom that has a long line is always the female's bathroom.
Exactly.
But these ladies had other intentions, and they didn't care to be bothered. So apparently someone knocked on the stall, and this is what got them in trouble, not their amorous acts, but the fact that one of the cheerleaders slugged the patron. And as a result of that, the police were called, and all hell broke loose at that particular time.
Oh, now you're going to go ahead and say some words. Let's just break it down. They got freaky in the bathroom and got caught. Number one.
And they have since been relieved of their duties as cheerleaders.
Yes. See, let's get there's one misnomer that they traveled with the team. They didn't travel with the team. They came on their own expense. They was not even going to perform.
Oh, that was on their own expense?
Yeah, they wasn't even performing.
So it was just the two of them, or was it the entire
cheerleader? I think there was others that decided to go with them, but they wasn't going to perform. They wasn't performing at the game. They was going to the game. They was going to Tampa Bay. Well, if you think about it, you're in Carolina. Might as well go ahead and go to Tampa. It's nice.
Believe
me,
I have been to Tampa Bay more times than I care to remember when I was in corporate America. The corporate office was there. So, I mean, Tampa is nice, but Wasn't that nice?
Well, if you haven't been nowhere, it's real nice. ain't the mush and bubble there, buddy. I wouldn't mind being in Tampa. I went to Jacksonville and was happy. So don't want to mush and bubble there, big guy, but geez, let's calm it down a little bit. So you look at that as far as that situation, and yeah. And then number two, I'm sorry. You know, I was spoiled, you know, with me being at my young youth working for the Bulls and had some very attractive women around me. But those two were the finest ones.
Are you trying to say that these women were not attractive?
Well,
you got to remember, like I told you before, they only showed the headshot.
Well, I'm sorry. You better be looking at the headshot because one looked like she got punched in the nose far too many times. That wasn't the first time she got into a fight. Let's just put it that way. Either she...
And I believe it was the blonde who was throwing the blows, wasn't it?
I really don't know which one was which, but one was drunk as a skunk, and the other one just started wailing. And I'm sorry, the brunette, she looked like she either been in some women's boxing matches, or she had one too many nose jobs. Just call it like it is.
Well, that's Sport Flight's Theater of the Absurd. Let's look at our week 10, our prognostication, our projections. Looking back at week 9, you just hit my tail.
How are we looking at week 9?
You had 4 correct, I had 1, and my only one was from last night. All right, the totals thus far through week 9, Sean 32, James 25. So I've got a lot of catching up to do.
Yeah, I can call.
But we got a number of weeks to go. We still got a number of weeks to go.
Yeah, me blowing this lead is like the Angels blowing the lead back in 95 with Seattle. Just letting you know. I'm not too worried about this.
All right, week 10's projections. Game number 1, the 4-4 Patriots versus the 3-5 Dolphins. Now, can the Pats recoup after Monday night's pasting?
That's going to be, and once again, it's a divisional game, so you can throw the records out. But I'm going to go ahead and pick New England. I think they're going to come back fiercely, not only because of the loss of the England Patriots, but it's a division game, which is very important now as far as tiebreaker situations. So I'm picking New England on this one.
Okay. I agree with you. I have chosen the Patriots to win, so we each will go there. The 5-3 Redskins travel to the 5-3 Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Now, the Bucs need to bounce back after their shellacking by the Panthers this past Sunday.
And
the Redskins are 1-3 on the road, and the Bucs are 3-1 at home.
Yeah, and they're not going to bounce back this week. The Redskins, with a big division win against Philadelphia, they're going to continue this role, and they're going to go ahead and beat Tampa Bay.
So you're going with the Redskins?
I'm going with Redskins.
Okay. My choice are the Tampa Bay Buccaneers to bounce back because the Bucs are 3-1 at home. The Redskins are 1-3 on the road.
And let's just pray to God Washington don't bring none of the cheerleaders to Tampa Bay.
To Tampa. Yeah, exactly.
Because obviously wild things just happen in Tampa.
The 6-2 Broncos travel to their arch nemesis, the Oakland Raiders, who are 3-5. And the Broncos are coming off of a bye week. The Raiders are coming off of their last play loss in Kansas City.
Once again, and you want to talk about throwing the records out between these two teams? I don't care if one was undefeated and one hasn't won a game. This is going to be a good game. It's going to be a hard-hitting game. And I am actually going to pick Oakland in this in an upset over Denver.
Okay. Sean goes with Oakland. Well, you know, the Broncos are 1-2 on the road. The Raiders are 2-2 at home, but they're 0-3 in the division. I'm going to go with Denver to continue to win. The 4-4 St. Louis Rams travel to Seattle to take on the 6-2 Seattle Seahawks. Running back Alexander and the Seahawks continue to roll. The Rams need to win to stay in the hunt.
Yeah, absolutely. Not only the hunting division, but quite possibly in the hunt of a wild card spot as well. But Seattle is playing too well, especially Sean Alexander, who's another a player you can actually put down as far as MVP candidates in the top five. I do believe Seattle and their running game will go ahead and beat the Rams.
Okay, I agree with you on that pick. The 5-3 Dallas Cowboys travel to the Northeast to take on the City of Brotherly Love, the 4-4 Philadelphia Eagles. Dallas is coming off of a bye week, and the TO-less Eagles are coming off of divisional loss.
Once again, another divisional game, and this is very important for both teams because this is spandex tight, this division race is. A division loss here will pretty much cripple you. With that being said, I think Philly's going to come out, show, and prove to everybody that T.O. is the issue for this team, and they're going to come out together in harmony. So I'm picking the Eagles in this contest.
Well, I have to agree with you there. I'm picking the Eagles, too, because the Cowboys are 2-2 on the road. The Eagles are 3-0 at home.
Absolutely.
So I'm going to go with the Eagles to bounce back as well. They've got to find some type of ground game.
Absolutely. I totally agree. But I do think with, and I said this last week, with that sports hernia and Donovan's not willingness to run in the run out of the pocket more than he's used to,
than he has in the past
is actually hurting this team as well as far as the running game. But you're absolutely right. I think they need to give more carries to Westbrook. He got his contract. I think they should go ahead. They should probably go ahead and start giving him the ball a little bit more. I wouldn't be surprised if he now volunteers to take more carries. So. They really do. You're absolutely right. They do need a running game because it's really pathetic. Compared to last year this time, they're rushing 35 less yards this year, and it's showing.
Yeah, it's just you can't win that way. You have to have a running game.
Yeah, you're absolutely right on that one.
And so, but one thing is for sure, I won't lose to you in the manner by which I did last week.
Yeah, you just basically agree with me with everything I said. That's a great way to do that.
No, I had my choices down earlier. But be that as it may, we thank you for your time, and as always, never has so few owed so much to so many. Peace! We're out of here.
SportFlight is now approaching its final destination. Please bring all seats to an upright position. Seat belts are to remain fastened until we come to a complete stop. Thank you for flying SportFlight magazine. We trust you have enjoyed your experience and will keep your dial locked in its current position until next week when you once again board SportFlight. A different sports perspective.